Good morning. I'm Jean Anderson. I'm 67 years old. Today's date is Friday, April 30th, 2021. I am calling in from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. My conversation partner is Rose Ramroop, who is a longtime patient, colleague, and friend.
I'm Rose Ramroop. I'm 57 years old, April 30th, 2021. I am here in Dundalk, Maryland, calling in. And my special friend, yes, Jean. Okay. Hi, Jean. How you doing?
Hey, Rose. So, Rose, we've known each other, 33 years? 34 years?
Yeah, 34 years almost now. Yeah.
Well, we've been friends for a long time, but before we were friends, I was your doctor.
Yes.
I wanted to start out by asking you to tell me about the time you found out you had HIV.
Well, it was the year, I remember so clearly, December the 22nd, 1987. I was a patient at the Baltimore Health Plan, and I remember that when I found out you were walking down this long hallway, and you were the one to give me my diagnosis. And that's how we first met. I didn't know you that well during that time, but when you told me that I was positive, right then and there, it was like it went in one ear and I didn't hear nothing else after. But I felt you touching my hand, asking me, is there anything you can do? Or, it was like, it wasn't really much back then that a person could say, because this was like a death notice, that they were, when you were first diagnosed, because you hear so much. But then I was in a state of, I never accepted it. I was like, really? And then I looked at myself and I said, I don't look sick. And then I remember when I left that clinic and I was walking up the hill, and I started wheezing. I thought I was ready to drop dead right then and there, because I thought that was it. Because I didn't understand what it meant to be HIV positive. It was a little scary. But then I didn't believe it at one point.
Did you tell anybody
first? Oh, yeah. I told my mom, my husband. But then my husband said, oh, no, that's not possible. He's like, he didn't have it. And I'm like, okay. How he said, you probably got it by, drawing people bloods and stuff. And then I thought back, I never had a finger stick or anything. But long story short, he had it. He knew he had it a year before he met me. So that's when a year after that, I started investigating, and life totally changed right then and there. It was like reality really hit in between 6 months to a year, because he had so many secrets.
Yeah. So I remember you very well.
Mm-hmm.
You were one of the first patients I ever had with HIV.
Yeah.
This was early enough that I never learned about HIV in medical school. I never learned about it or saw a patient in residency. And there was a lot of fear and stigma then. I remember you were afraid.
Yeah.
And tell people where to get care. Tell me a little bit more about
it. Well, the reason I was so afraid is that, you know, when you talk to your family member, you think that's your biggest support that can help. But my family turned against me. It's like nobody wanted me around them. They treated my kids as though they had the disease. So life just completely stopped. And I went into this real dark place that I felt alone, I felt isolated, and I felt like I wasn't a part of human society because the way people were treating me. So I think I forced myself in a denial. I just stopped going around people. I wouldn't open my shades. You know, I wouldn't let the light in. But some reason, when I had GYN issues and I needed to see a GYN provider, you had left the health plan. So then those doctors didn't treat me very well. So I remember this lady told me you went to Johns Hopkins, and I followed your trail to find you. And you, because you always treated me with respect and you didn't treat me different. So that's where I was like, I got to find this lady. I didn't know your first name. I just knew it was Anderson. And I knew what you looked like. And I knew that Southern accent. So I had to find you. And then that's where I found you at the main hospital. So my life had changed dramatically. Even though I didn't believe it on one hand, but the way I was treated, it changed completely in life.
Well, I remember initially you didn't want to go to an HIV clinic.
No.
What? And why?
Tell me when I first went, that was back in 88, they scheduled me to come to this clinic, the HIV clinic. And when I walked through the doors, people would look like they were about ready to die. It looked like how would I describe it? People were so sick and so frail. They looked so different from anything I ever saw. And it was a lot of males. And back then, I didn't believe I had it because of the fact that I said this was a gay male disease. I'm not gay. I'm not a male. So I said somebody had to make a mistake. So when they went back there, that's who was monitoring. I ran out that door. I went in the door, saw how sick those people were, and I ran back out that door. And I wouldn't come to the clinic. And then I had a nurse named Sharon that used to call me to get me to come back in. And I was like, all right, I'll come today, but I'm not coming any other time. But then you had started a clinic in that clinic. And because you started that clinic in that clinic, I would come for GYN. Basically, I was like getting my health care monitored through you instead of a primary care provider. And then that's when you introduced me to Jean, the other Jean Keller, and she became my primary care provider. But even though that clinic was scary, I would not sit. If I had to sit in that waiting room, I would get up and leave. And if somebody came and said my name out loud, I'd zap out on them because I didn't want to be known in that clinic. So then my nurse, she's so sweet, she used to catch me before I would run out that clinic. As soon as she knew I was there, she would flag it and she would have me come and sit to the back and wait until I was seen. And that's how I was so non-compliant, though. Even though all that, I was just non-compliant. I would not come. I was like, yeah, all right, I got an appointment, but I wouldn't come. And then Jean Keller went completely to GYN, and I had to get a male doctor, another doctor. And I could not stand a male doctor. I went in the room when I first met this doctor, and I came back out to Jean Keller and told her, oh, no, you got to be my provider because I don't like him. He's not a good doctor. And Jean said, oh, you should give him a chance. I said, no, I want you to be my doctor. And she said, I can't. And I said, well, I guess I'm going to wind up dying. And she was like, oh, no, I'll talk to him, you know. And the next thing I know, when I sat down with him, he was kind of like, I know what's going on with you. It was like people would talk to you, but not talk at you, but not to you. And I looked at him and I said, well, you can't treat me for nothing if you don't know what I'm here for. I ain't talking to you. And that's when he changed his whole tone. And he sat there to get to know me as that person. And we're good friends today, you know? So he became like, and I'm a hypochondriac. So everything, when I saw people dying, I knew I had it. I said, oh, I look like that, my hair thinning, you know, but nothing was wrong with me. I looked healthy, you know? So, but I came, you helped me get to that clinic.
So, you know, when you were first diagnosed, we really didn't have any treatment.
No.
And I remember telling you that I could take care of you up to a point.
Yeah.
But you started getting sick, that you needed some more infectious disease specialist care. And
yeah.
What happened? I mean, you started getting sick.
I got sick in 94, around the middle of 94. I started losing weight. And then, because I hadn't had a CD4 count, because back then all they did was CD4. I hadn't had a CD4 count drawn in almost 7 years, because I would never go get my labs done. I was very noncompliant. I was scared to find out. I felt like no news was good news. If I don't know about it, I don't have to deal with it. And so when I finally got my CD4 count done and it came back that I had 33 T cells, I was living a new diagnosis all over again. And it just became more of a reality. But it didn't settle in until, you know, I remember the new medications was coming out, and that was in 95. But by then I had this rash on my face. My, I had this molluscum in my head, and I never heard of molluscum a day in my life, but it was huge. I had like a big one. And then this man came through the door. I remember my nurse was rolling him to the back, to the treatment center, and this man looked deformed. He had molluscum all over his face, and I said, oh my God, that's what I'm gonna look like. So like I told you, I was a hypochondriac. Everything anybody else had, I knew was gonna happen to me. And Joel in 95 had told me about the new cocktail drugs, the heart therapy. And I was absolutely, I was like, no, I don't want it. I don't want it. But you know how he got me to take it? All he had to say was these words to me. He said, I found out from some of my patients that when they started heart, their face cleared up, their act, the skin irritations and diseases cleared up. And I said, okay, write me the prescription. And that was the main thing. He knew how to use, he was learning me so well that he could use things to know that I was very vague about how my appearance was, that he could use that. And that's how he got me to start taking the heart medicines. And then I was on Crixivan, AZT, and another one. And then I got these big, huge Dolly Parton breasts that I was like, ooh. I was like, oh, my prayers really changed. But then I started seeing people with this thing called Crixivan belly. And that was kind of making me like, oh, I don't want to take this medicine. They were looking pregnant. And there were men that was on it that looked pregnant. Their legs got small. And I remember one time I told Joel that I had a little bit of a butt, and you took it away by putting me on these drugs. I got these Dolly Parton boobs, but no butt. But he encouraged me to take them. And then I kept getting kidney stones. And I had them 7 times. And I told him, if he got to figure out something else, if it's not breathing, then I'm coming off the medicine. And he knew I was going to take myself off. And then it was another regimen. So by then, regimens were starting to come in. And he would help me study him. I had to learn about HIV in order to survive. That's where I would come in and ask you questions. Even though I was, you know, asking for myself, sometimes I used the third person and say, oh, my friend had this, or somebody I know had this, you know, to learn the information. Not to let y'all know I wanted to learn it, but Joel, he taught me, you taught me, and especially when it came to complications with GYN and HIV. So I learned from the best.
So let me, you know, I think on the medical side of it at that point, You know, we had very few. AZT was the first drug. We had very few HIV drugs.
Right.
And then they, you know, fortunately, we were just one step ahead.
Yeah.
There were more drugs and more drugs that were developed and more we learned. And you were right in the time period to really benefit.
Because I remember Ricky told me, my first husband told me that I was going to be used as a guinea pig and that he was going to survive and I wasn't. And I looked at him and I said, well, you don't have MD behind your name, so I guess I'm going to have to go with the guinea pig. And I told him, because of our relationship and the lies, I didn't trust him. But when the AZT was out, for some reason, I did not want to take AZT because I kept seeing how people's nails were getting dark, their skin tones were changing. And then to come and find out, they really didn't know how to dose, to really properly dose patients and stuff. And that's what, you know, it was like, you know, people were dying by the waterfalls. And, you know, I really appreciate the gay community, because if the gay community didn't force a lot of issues of finding ways of helping us, I was the change of faces to women that were heterosexual that are getting infected by their partners or their husbands, you know, and it helped me motivate me to want to help other women just like myself. Because I kind of said, if Jean can help somebody, what can I do? What part can I do? And I think when I came to you, I remember having this conversation with you. And I told you, I said, when I had got sick, people wanted me to go on disability. And I was in the GYN office with you and I was crying. I said, I think if I go on disability, it's admitting that something is wrong and I think I'll die. My work is my life. It's keeping me alive. And you was like, if that's the way you feel, you should continue doing what you're doing. So you was a big encouragement to me.
So, when did you start working with our program, with our women's HIV program?
In 93, October the 21st of 93, I remember that. Because I was working with another program, and then I remember coming out about my disease, I got angry about men having affairs, knowing that they had this virus. And I felt like I had to warn women. And when you asked me to, you know, work for you, I was happy. I was like, I'm honored to work for Dr. Anderson. I'm like, you were like, you're a legend in everybody's book. It was like you were the archangel that saved people, you know. Even if people die, you show so much compassion to where patients, it was like they didn't want to see no other GYN person but you. So your lines was getting so long. And I was like, why is it taking me so long to see Gene? And I just realized it was so many women. They love you. It's not just me. You helped a lot of women.
So Rose, you've been such an important part of our program.
Yeah.
Since that time, 1993.
Yeah.
What do you find the most rewarding?
Well,
and what you do with in that program, helping other women.
The thing about our program is that in OB and GYN, for one, it was empowering women to help educate women to learn about their health. And especially the ones that were pregnant. I had my mission, and it was the same mission you have, is to prevent transmission from mother to child and also have the mom stay healthy. Because, you know, when we do HIV, it's not just taking care of the mom, it's the whole family, you know, because if the whole family in that household not together, then it's going to have a breaking point. So it's so rewarding just to see women get on medicine and stay on medicine. And we have, since 2000, no infected babies so far? We got a knock on wood. So, and the amazing training that you have done among doctors, because if it wasn't for your training, and then I help you with a lot of that, we doing presentations going from here to there, these doctors were so ignorant, and y'all changed the whole outlook of how doctors look at patients now. So I'm just saying, I love what I do. It's a rewarding job. At first it was just, oh, I gotta warn people, but then it became bigger. It became bigger.
Well, it's, you know, it's amazing to me.
Quick question, sir. Just a quick clarifying question. Could you just describe a little bit about what the program is? The name of it, things like that, and then please continue.
Okay. Jean, quick question. Do we name the program or we just say the specialty?
No, we can. Yeah, we can.
Because of confidentiality for the patients and stuff.
It was the Johns Hopkins HIV Women's
Health. All right. Okay. All right.
And
so coming to
let me just say that we provide reproductive health care to women with HIV. So both pregnant and non-pregnant women.
And that's a rewarding job, you know. Actually made a career out of it, you know. Didn't know it was going to turn into that, but I did. And then
I was going to just say that, you know, if we look back 33, almost 34 years, you were so afraid.
I was.
You didn't want to tell people. And now you speak and have spoken all over the country about HIV. You know, tell me how that's been, because,
well,
HIV changed and the fear has changed, but it's still there.
Well, the thing about it is that when I started speaking out about it, I started out of anger because I wanted to stop my husband from passing the virus to other women. But then it became bigger than that because I saw something more than this. It was the way people treated other people. So it was a good time to talk about scenarios like how family members, you know, when we brought patients in the ER and if family members found out about their children, they was, I mean, we went through some horrific stuff where people sprayed Lysol on them. They put them out of their home. For me, I was so afraid because the fact that I had had children at the time, and I didn't want to be where if people was ripping people kids away from them, that from the positive one was like, okay, I'm gonna take these kids so they don't have HIV with the mother, or, you know, it was like finding them new families. And I was so terrified of that, to where that's where some things where you used to hear where people tell you what they want you to know, but not what was really going on. And I didn't have that fear with telling you. So what I did was, you became a family member to me, because I couldn't tell my own family the things I told you. And I said, well, they cast me out of their family, I'm going to go build my own family. So I went and got a sister, two sisters. I got you, Sharon, you, Sharon, and Jean. And then I went and got a brother. That he was so annoying at the time, that was Joe Gallant. But the thing is that from that, I was able to talk to you guys. I think if I had held that in, I might have would have died, you know, because you encouraged me. And I never felt with everybody there that I was being judged. Or like when I would go to an ER or something and I tell the doctor how I became infected, And they'll go, oh, you had to use drugs. And I'm like, I never used drugs a day in my life. Or you was a prostitute. I'm not a prostitute. You know, so people didn't realize that you can get this disease just from one person. And it happened. So I just built a friendship and a relationship and we became family. And so people used to ask me about my family. I said, oh, Jean, Joe. Yeah, they my family. And you guys had a relationship with my children. So the thing is now from what it was back then, how, you know, people, you know, would put people out and they had nowhere to go. That's the fearful thing. And then losing their job. God blessed me in so many ways. He landed me this job. He drew me to you. Because I always wanted to work somewhere where I didn't have to fear about my HIV status. It's like hard to keep a secret. And it kills you to keep that secret. And here, when I started working for you, I didn't have to keep those secrets. I mean, I came like an open book. It took a while, but it became a big open book. And then I think because of that, and my family saw that this didn't bring me down, that's when I start seeing a little bit acceptance from them, a little bit normalcy. But no, they, you know, never have I've always, you know, in families, my immediate family, I have gotten thrown up in my face about my disease and stuff. And then people was telling people that something that was not true. So I figured, well, why listen to that and tell my own truth? And that's what I did.
You know, I think that those of us who were around in those early days, yeah, on the medical side, there was a lot of fear and stigma. Yes. So we were sometimes isolated. And I think all of us really bonded with each other. My best friends come from those days. Yeah. My best friend. And that includes you.
Yes. I think we had to mentally help each other because we saw so much death.
Yeah.
Back then. It was like, it was not a day went by that somebody didn't die or more people died. Now you don't see that.
Yeah, it's we used to have weekly medical meetings of mm-hmm. the service, and that's exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. It was basically going over all the people who had died.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a miracle, Rose.
Yeah.
You're a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your life now, because
I'm gonna tell you, I never thought I would have this life I have now. With my first husband dying, that had set reality for me. Oh wow, this disease is real. Because you know, at that time nobody was really getting sick like we were. But then 94, even though I got sick, I still didn't believe it, you know. And then when I met my husband I'm with now, we've been married for 23. Can you believe December the 1st will be 23 years. And we chose December the 1st because that was World AIDS Day. And I told him, I said, well, you know what? AIDS Day, I had to live, and I always did presentation. I said, I want to do something positive on that day. And that was the day we chose to get married. So he's negative, and I always thought that, you know, he treated me with so much respect. You know, I always kept saying, people kept telling me, when you let other people in your life, they said, oh, he's going to eventually throw stuff up in your face. Never did. You can have arguments or whatever. Never done that, ever, ever. And he's a wonderful man. So, you know, and we even had, knowing I'm positive, we had a child even afterwards. You know, we came to you about the safe way of doing it. And back then people were still discriminating about a person should not have children, you know, and all the medication and stuff we knew then, and the transmission rate, you know, you had to go to bat for me on a lot of stuff because I had my tubes tied and I got them reversed. And, you know, I never forget that when I talked to you about it, you was like, absolutely. But the thing is that we wasn't sure how it was going to get paid for. And I said, well, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. God going to provide. And here it is. And that baby is 20 years old and she's negative. So, and I knew women were going to want, not just me, because I remember I came to you as a third person. I said, you know, I hear around the women talking about now that transmission is down to 5%. It was like 8 to 5% on them taking the other medication was at 2%. I said, they talk people thinking about having babies all over again. And we was like, oh, well, tell them to come to me before anybody just get pregnant. And I was sitting there, well, I'm going to tell her. I said, let me just be honest. I want to have a baby. I want to get that life that I didn't have, you know, because my life as being a wife, it was like once 87 happened, December the 22nd, my life changed. And it was no more happiness of being married. And my husband now, he's a good stepfather. And I said, I wonder what it would be like to have a baby with him. And you encouraged me so much. And here it is, that little pumpkin. She was a preemie, but she's here. And she don't look like no preemie, do she, Jay? Because that's a big girl. So I looked at what I did in life. I encourage other women. Because you can have that normal life. And it's just that learning about your HIV, learning how to control, taking your medicines, and keeping open communication. Because I remember when I brought my husband to you to talk to him about my HIV status, because I said, he don't believe it for some reason. Because, you know, because everything look good, feel good, smell good, to you ain't always good for you. But the thing is, I told him, I said, if you don't be with me, you need to know how to protect yourself. And that's where I was like, my goal was to educate him. And then he started educating everybody in his family. So his whole family, no, they accepted me, you know? And I was like, And it was a funny thing. He was like, when should we tell anybody? I said, well, let's see, because if they don't like me, it's because they don't like me because of me. I don't want them to use this disease to say, oh, I don't like Rose. So when everybody found out in 94, because I did that documentary, remember that documentary? That's when everybody found out, because they said it was supposed to be just for educational base, but it went worldwide. So his mother, everybody found out during that time. And she looked at me and said, Rosie, do Sanel have it? I said, no. And I talked to her about it. And then she said, but I love you so much. You're going to die? I said, lady, I ain't dying. I said, I ain't dying. I'm going to be here to torture you a whole lot. So, you know, and I had to educate them, because then I started seeing that they were having relationship issues. So now,
but Rose,
it's good.
Let me just ask you before we finish, if you have any questions you've always wanted to ask me.
I always wanted to ask you this. When you first met me, because I always wonder, the relationship we have is like sisters. We can be friends, we sisters. You, when I got sick, remember when I got sick and I lost all that more weight than anything, and I was on all these medicine, 30 drugs, 30 pills, and I said, I'm gonna die. You and Jean came to my house, bought me orange juice and everything. You would just come no matter what. What made you think, how do you think our relationship, I've always wanted to know, how did we just get here? You know, because you're a doctor, and I used to look at people as doctors, not like, you know, friends like that. But we had something. I just wanted to know from you, when did you know?
You know, as I said, I never learned about HIV when I was in medical school or residency. I remember the first patient I saw just a few months before I met you, who had HIV, and I stood outside her door and thought, can I go in? You know, I felt some fear. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if I can't go in and treat her like any other patient, then I can't be a doctor.
Wow.
And I decided right then that this is what I wanted to do. This was sort of my mission. And I, you know, there wasn't much I could do at that time, right. But I felt like it was important to me to give people comfort if I couldn't cure them. If I couldn't help them live.
Right.
So you came along not long after that. And right. We just clicked. And
because,
you know,
I remember you were in the research department, but I would not see nobody else but you. And you took me on no matter what. So I just kind of wondered, because, you know, me and you became more than just friends. We became family. But to see your eyes and your compassion when you walked down that hall and you saw me, that you had to give that diagnosis, how was that for you?
Well, it was like giving a death sentence back then.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know if I can even express it very well. You are one of the most important people in my life.
Yes.
And
we've been through mothers together. You know, when our moms were here and they got sick, we've been through a lot together.
Yeah. And you're an amazing role model for women. You've helped a lot of women come to terms with their HIV, helping them with disclosing that, helping them deal with the fear and the stigma. And
you know,
I'm very lucky to have met you.
I think from my experience of what I went through with my family and friends helped me be the counselor I am today, because I've experienced a lot of that. And I know when I see patients come through the door, I don't assume what they're going through. I have to meet them where they at. And build that trust with them. But I kind of build that trust very fast, because now everybody call me Mama Rose. And then they keep saying they want your grandchild wants you. I'm like, hold on, I ain't got that many grandkids. But I embrace them. But I just remember I could see your face in your white coat walking down that hall. And it looked like you was ready to cry more than me. So that's why I was like, you're an amazing person. And I love you. I love all the people that took care of me, because I don't think I'd been here if it wasn't for y'all. And the educational piece, because, you know, when you educate someone and you educate them medical, you broke it down in a layman's term that I could understand. And I appreciate it.
And I love you,
Liz. I love you too. Forever.